This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Lauren Dinya. How are you, Lauren?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm very good indeed, very good indeed. You're a Level 4 tutor at WST School.
That's right.
In London.
Yes.
And you are in charge of enrichment.
Well, events and enrichment manager, that's my job title. So what that means is that I provide opportunities for the students to learn beyond the classroom or online activities that they're doing at diploma.
And sometimes you write mock exams.
That's right. Yeah, I do some of the stuff as well for in class. So I create some of the exams that they do, the mock exams, not the real ones, unfortunately.
No, no. I think that'd be a terrible job, to be honest. I feel sorry for them. I mean, it's the sort of job I'd love for about 2 months, and then I think I'd get a bit frustrated.
And then you get all the feedback from the students when they haven't done very well.
Yeah. So. But what I want to talk about today is the theory exam. We're talking about level four. Theory exam, and all the different units, D1 production, D2 business, D3 wines of the world, D4 sparkling, D5 fortified, not the D6 assignment, but all the others have a theory component
to
it.
They do indeed, yes.
And we were speaking earlier, we did an introduction to the Level 4 a while ago, and one of the things that you said was it's the theory where the failure rate is, not the tasting.
Yes, it tends to be the case. And it's, you know, the tasting is, people get nervous about it, as we mentioned, because it is a new thing to be assessed on, whereas most people have had some assessment of their writing in different formats, essays or whatever. But I think it's the level of content and it's the approach to answering the questions. So people do fail, unfortunately. And usually it's because they haven't answered the question as set. Either they don't know the content that that they need to, enough of the content they need to, and time management as well. So they tend to be the main reasons.
Yeah. Okay. So let's just drill into those a little bit. So the question is set. They don't have the content, or they've mucked up their time management.
Yes.
Let's start with time management because I think that's the easiest one. Because I had a student a while ago who was doing the level three. There's four questions in the level three, and he nailed them. He thought he was brilliant. And then just 10 minutes to go, he turned over and realised it wasn't two questions, it was four in the exam.
Oh, it's your worst nightmare, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness, he was writing like crazy. I can't remember whether he failed or not, because he was a very top, he was a good student.
I think he probably did, if you miss out half of the...
No, he had 10 minutes, so he could get down as much
okay,
as he could. He
well, might, good luck with that.
I'm not sure if he failed or not.
If he did, well done.
Yeah.
It passed, rather.
Yeah. But time management, what's the best way of doing that? Because they've got one paper usually. Sometimes they've got the paper and the tasting as part of the paper as well. So how do you manage the time?
Well, for the like D4 and D5, where they're combined, you know,
that's the sparkling.
Yeah,
and the
sparkling
fortified,
yes. The exams have created the paper so that you should be spending 45 minutes on each. So I think really follow those guidelines. Do your tasting in 45 minutes, so you've got a full 45 minutes for your theory. And then, you know, definitely make sure you don't have less than that amount of time. And then you will get a weighting for each question. So you have 3 to 4 questions, and each question will be given a weighting, a percentage, you know, out of 100. So have a look. You know, if you've got a 40% question and you've got 45 minutes, then you're looking at that proportion of time.
Yeah.
Exactly. So just under 20 minutes. So make sure that you do not spend no longer on that question. And I know it's tempting when you're very familiar with a topic, you know, oh, I know that, I'm going to write everything I know about that, yay. And then leave yourself not enough time to address other questions. So be strict and strategize. You know, if there are areas, maybe don't leave the question you're strongest in till last, in case you do, you know, because that's where you're going to most likely get more marks. But at the same time, make sure you're strict enough to not overwrite and to manage that time properly. A little bit different with other exams, because again, it depends how long the exam is. So the D1 exam is an hour and a half. That's the wine production is an hour and a half. D2 is an hour. And then you've got 45 minutes for D4 and D5 for the sparkling and the fortified. But then you've got 40 minutes per question for your D3, the wines of the world. So, yeah, and you've got 3 questions for the first paper, and then you've got two questions to answer on the second paper, but each one needs to have 40 minutes spent on each one of those, if you're going to write as much as you need to for each.
I think we'll do a whole podcast on the D3.
That is a whole other ball game, isn't it? Yes.
That's the one that most people fail on.
It definitely is.
But let's just keep it pretty high level at this stage here. So you've talked about time management.
Mm-hmm.
The other one is just not knowing stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've just got to know the stuff. You've got to read it, you've got to revise it, you've got to read it again, you've got to, you know, if it helps, read around the subject. You know, listen to podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Good plug.
So, yeah, you need to know it. You don't maybe need, you know, you're, the level that you get, whether it be pass, merit or distinction, maybe you won't have remembered everything. But as long as you've got enough relevant content, then, yeah, you should be able to pass.
How much detail, like, because it's open response, it's not like they ask you, what is the colour of a tawny port? You know, and you just need to say what the colour is. So you can work around things you're not so sure about.
I mean, again, it depends on the question. So some questions will be define. You need to basically regurgitate the facts. And usually they're not that heavily weighted when it's a question like that. But then there'll be other questions which might sort of account for the success of, or what are the strengths and weaknesses of, you know, such a region or such a category of wine. And I think in those areas, then, you know, it depends. You've got different approaches. If you've got an approach which is asking you to evaluate and look at strengths and weaknesses, or, you know, opportunities, threats, then you can be a little bit creative in a sense. But where you've got something asking you to define and explain, you know, winemaking or, you know, a particular style, then you're going to have to, you know, particularly for the classic region, you're going to have to know.
Yeah. And that's interesting. You're using these verbs. These are the same verbs from level three.
Yeah, our command verbs.
I know, that's a big... Whenever I go to anything about WSD, everybody's talking about command verbs.
Yeah, I just see them as a set of instructions. You need to know what they mean, and it's all in the theory guidance document, actually. But you need to know what they mean, and you know then how, what you need to do when you see those words. So it's a bit like, yeah, that's an instruction. They're telling me to define. What does define mean? How do you define? And then make sure you do it.
What's the theory guidance?
So the theory guidance is a document that you get access to when you're a diploma student. So it's in the area that all diploma students have access to on the online classroom. So there's a tasting guidance document and a theory guidance document.
The level three specification talks a lot about different things along the exam, whereas the level four specification really is quite thin on a lot of content.
Mm.
And I presume that's in this theory guidance.
I think there's probably elements of it there, yeah.
Quite important to read?
Definitely.
And in terms of approaching the questions, those command verbs are essential, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. You can't ignore them. You know, you need to be taking in your highlighters and being like, right, that's a command verb, so that's telling me what to do. This is the topic. These are the specifics of the topic, you know, and I'm not veering off topic.
Yeah, and literally not veering off
topic. Oh, God, no. You know, write pages and pages, but if it's not relevant, you're not going to get the marks.
Yeah, yeah. And do you find students are time compressed in these?
Or? Oh, yeah. They've often students come out and they go, I just didn't have enough time. You know, they don't come out saying, oh, yeah, I could have done that in half the time.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Although, I'm always looking at level three because that's where I know the students quite well. And I always find the people who leave the exam early are either the ones who haven't done the work, and I know whether they've done the work because we've got flashcards and mock exams, so I can see the workload that the students have done. And they're either the ones who have done no work or they've done loads of work, and they're the ones who leave. And the ones who stay till the end are the ones who have done a fair bit of work but not gone crazy, if you know what I mean.
I don't think that's the case at diploma. I think most students stay to the end. Often if they leave early, it's because they leave really early.
Just go to the bar.
Yeah, and it's like, no, this one's not for me. Yeah. So, yeah, most students do stay, if not all the way to the end, fairly close to the end. Yeah. I think my most studious students, I do tend to see right at the end of the exams.
Okay. So it is a time, you are under time.
Oh, absolutely. I think if people could write more, we had the opportunity to write more, they would.
All right. So let's talk about answering the question is set, all right? Because content, the best thing for content to know your facts is flashcards.
I just mentioned
we've got a load of really good flashcards to help you pass the exams.
Yeah, and any way you can remember stuff is really useful. But, yeah, and with as with time management and as with command verbs, you know, practicing, doing mocks, and I think actually that can almost help you assess what you do and do not know. So create with other people in your groups, you can create questions for each other based on past questions or whatever, just to see what you've mastered and what maybe you've yet to master. But answering the question as set is so important because a lot of students go off topic, and I think this can be dangerous for students who know too much because they kind of want to just write about the things that they know a lot about that may be loosely tied to the question but aren't actually answering the question. And you know, it's tied in with the command verbs as well. Do what the command verbs are telling you to. If they're asking you to, you know, compare one region with another region, you know, you don't need to start adding in any others. Or, you know, if it's really what you should be comparing are the grape varieties, the soil types, the weather, the climate, don't bring in something else into it. As much as you want to show off how much you know about a specific producer or anything else, if it's not on topic, planning is actually a very important thing. If you plan for your answer, then in effect, you are making yourself answer the question as set.
There does seem to be certain structures to answers as well.
There can be, yes.
So I was talking to a guy called Ewan who marks...
That's right, yes.
And he was saying that, you know, once a student knows the structure, then they're just fitting in the facts to a particular question. And the structure seems to be driven a lot by the command verbs as well.
Yeah.
So do you want to, is there anything, tips you can give on that?
I think, you know, sometimes a question which is asking you about specifics for a particular region, you don't want to necessarily be writing an essay. So, you know, if you're being asked to look at, maybe you're doing comparisons or you're sort of evaluating a set things, then you don't want to be... so let's say, for example, there was a question recently about Rioja and wines being sold with the more regional labels, being sold as brands, other things in that question, I can't remember exactly. But what you don't want to be doing is writing a whole instruction on Rioja. I don't know where it is, what the general climate is, and things like that. You need to be straight in, right. If we're looking at labelling terms, you know, defining those and explaining what needs to be explained to answer that question. So I think students sometimes go in and they're sort of with this softly approach when actually you just need to go straight in, bite the bullet, answer the question straight away. So that might be one structure. Another might well be an essay. You know, if it's an evaluation question, it's sort of like almost a discussion. You know, the pros, the cons, overall, what's the general conclusion? You know, so that is going to be more of an introduction, some paragraphs and a conclusion there.
That was something Ewan pointed out, was that if they do ask for an essay-type question, do an introduction, do a conclusion.
Yeah, I don't think essay questions are asked for anymore, though.
Okay.
You don't have to write any answer as an essay, but I do think sometimes the questions lend themselves to an essay format.
Mm-hmm.
They're also, you know, where we've got more business-type questions, it might be that using the five Ps, you know, people, place, promotion, price, etc., that you can structure your answer. I know it's only four. I can't remember what the other one is. It's, you know, somewhere in my brain. So you can structure it that way. Or, you know, if they're asking you about strengths and weaknesses, you know, if all that seems to be the gist of the question, you know, you can maybe use a SWOT analysis to help you. You know, there are different formats that can be helpful. Some more work better with other units than others. So I think D2, the business... wine business tends to look for those structures more than maybe D3 or Wines of the World, but definitely plan. You're writing a 40-minute answer, so give yourself out of that 40 minutes, 3 or so minutes, to plot what it is that you're going to include and make sure that you're not going to include anything that isn't necessary.
Yeah. I think one of the problems I've always had, because I'm my background's engineering. I can do maths, equations. Mm. Writing essays, not really my thing. Mm. So I would always struggle with that type of thing, mainly because I'm illiterate, which is why I do an audio show. But one of the things I found, and I picked it up from attending a WSET seminar for APPs, was they went through a question and they literally said, okay, this is the question, and they highlighted the different parts, and then they said, okay, so what does that mean? And then they wrote out the components, and then the question was, I can't remember what the question was actually, but then you had to define a load of parameters. So you write out what they're looking for, then you write out what the definition is, and then the key part is always the linkages. How do they fit together to create that style of wine or whatever
sure,
it is?
Yeah.
And then you, at the bottom layer, you wrote down how the linkages were, and then you had like maybe three lines of in your book and your notes, but that told you how to exactly what you need to do and how to write each paragraph and how the linkages work. So it then became very formulaic in terms of approaching the question. And I really took that on board, and I spent a bit of time with my students. We always have an extra, at level three, we always have an extra session, a two-hour session. We make room for it in the course where we go through questions like this and show them how to lay it out, because we get a lot of students who have English isn't their primary language.
I think that's where you can see some issues there with that kind of explanation, the linking side of things, because it is going further, isn't it? And having to, it's definitely essential, and I do think that's something at level four that all students actually do find difficult. And I do think as well, you know, if English isn't your first language, it is harder to explain yourself and explain, you know, these things in the exam. And got so many students from different backgrounds who have great expertise. You know, got loads of students who are winemakers, you know, who work for international companies in wine, and they know so much. But yeah, there's always going to be a bit of language. Sometimes there is language barriers or, you know, difficulty with writing. And I think that's one of the reasons they took away the essay format as being compulsory, was because it's not a familiar format for everybody. But I think you're right to be able to spell out to students, and I think this is beneficial for all students, the fact that you do need to make those links. And explain is a command verb that comes up a lot. And it's often you get students who know a lot, and you can tell they know it, but they're just not doing the explanation. So when you are asking to look at differences or similarities within a region, you might say, well, this soil type is this here, and this soil type is this here. But are you saying how that affects the style, the quality of the wine, you know? And in some instances, it's useful to just repeat the question in your answer. Often the questions are account for, explain how this here results in this. And so just saying what is there is not enough.
Is there any particular styles of questions, or that you mentioned the business of wine has particular types of questions sometimes, in terms of they tend to be more about the five P's or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's it really. It's just look out for that, for the business side of things. They'll use terminology that's particular to wine business, and so you need to know what that is to know how to answer the question correctly. I think there is quite a bit of terminology, if you're not in the business of wine, that can be a little bit tricky.
Let's talk about the information. There's a couple of things that I just want to touch on. One of them is, you've mentioned soils a lot over the last 2 hours we've been chatting.
I haven't meant to. It was just a...
but at level three, you don't really talk about soils.
Yeah.
I mean, there are, in the textbook, there's the odd mention of soils. In fact, I've pulled out all the references to soils and what the level three says about them, and create a grid for my students so they can understand what they are. But it's very limited. It's all about porosity, permeability, and heat. You know, that they are the three things that seem to be the driver there. But you've mentioned it a couple of times. At level three, at level four, do you need to be able to understand soils? Because there's a lot of bullshit about soils.
Well, you do. You need to know, you know, what the main soil types are in specific regions, particularly if they do impact on the, you know, the style and potentially the quality of the wine. And then you'd need to say why that is, you know, how, what the effect is on the grapes, potentially probably more to do with how they are affected or how they help, you know, with the general climate. So, you know, if it's somewhere that's maritime, what are conducive soils for maritime climate? And so therefore, how is that going to affect the vine? Maybe continue down, down that route. But yeah, you don't necessarily need to be, you know, saying every single rootstock that would be good to plant in that soil type. You know, if you've got some, great. But really, it's more conceptual. It's like, okay, this is the climate, this is the weather, this is the soil type. So how do these things work to enable healthy vines?
Okay.
You know, so what? So this site is better because this soil type or this aspect, you know, is going to enable, you know, less frost or, you know, whatever it is. Maybe you might need to put a bit more detail, but fundamentally you will be linking again, and you will need to know a bit more. And you know, maybe mention things like chlorosis when you've got sort of limestone soils, you know, things like that. So,
and you mentioned rootstocks as well, because again, rootstocks is something we barely touch on at level three, but level four there's quite a bit on. Or
there is a bit, and I don't, you don't need to memorize every single rootstock that comes up in the books. You know, you just need to maybe know the, maybe even just say, oh, it's Vitis vinifera, Vitis berlandieri, for example, maybe rather than naming particular rootstocks. Or just say, well, in this region, like say, for example, Jerez, you know, you've got the Albarica soil, which is that chalky soil, high limestone content. And so therefore, you know, it does need to, and we're in Jerez, so in, our rootstocks need to be drought tolerant. They need to be limestone tolerant. They need to also be high yielding. So those are the, so you might not know the name of a rootstock that does all those things, but you know that that's the kind of rootstock that you need. So you might not get a couple of marks for stating the exact rootstock, but you will probably get quite a lot of marks because you're talking about, if you're being asked about what happens in the vineyard or anything where that is a relevant answer, you know, you're going to get your marks for that. So,
okay. The other big thing that's talked about a lot in the textbooks that aren't in level three is producers and particular wines as well. They do reference producers and particular wines, which you just never see at level three. So all of a sudden you've added not just more technical stuff like rootstocks and more soil types, but also you're adding a layer. Do you need to be able to quote producers?
Or no, not really. You can get, I think, quite easily a pass, probably a merit without mentioning a producer. When I've read the theory guidance, it did say, you know, the materials that you have, the books that are provided by WSET Global, there are mentions of some producers in there. So that's there. And, you know, you should use those as and where you can if necessary. And you probably will get a few marks here and there for that. You don't have to use anything beyond those materials. But if you do, there is room for an extra mark or two. So I wouldn't say don't use producers. If you've got a great producer in mind who is known, there's no point talking about, you know, your brother-in-law's uncle who's got a few vineyards in somewhere in Italy. That's probably not going to be that helpful. But if you talk about Gigal or, you know, a big producer from a region that, you know, is pretty well known, then, you know, I think that, because they're doing something that is in line with what you're trying to demonstrate in your answer, then yeah.
So it's worth a couple of marks, but don't get too stressed about
it. No, don't start thinking, oh, I've got to learn the names, particularly if you're not in wine. And I think it's more tricky for people who don't come across bottles and producers day in, day out. You know, if you're not in wine, don't start trying to learn all of them. It takes the fun away, and, you know, you'll come across producers and get to know them as you taste and are enthusiastic about wine. Don't try cramming, you know, 10 producers just because you've decided you need to find a few Rhone producers to talk about in your exam.
I don't think I'll ever meet a level four student studying the D3 who says, oh, the fun of it. I mean, they are a pretty stressed bunch who are pretty focused.
I know, we get quite, I do find a few of our students are retirees, and they just kind of, they just want something to do.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a challenge, and it's a challenge that they enjoy. But yeah, not everyone. Definitely not everyone.
Okay, cool. All right then, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Okay.
Cheers very much, Lauren.
No, you're welcome.